She's April.
And she's Molly.
And we are
the Book Besties.
It bunted a pigeon up another woman's skirt.
First and foremost, F you.
And then we went and got gelato.
I would be in the Princess Posse.
And there's literally hooks to hold on to stuff everywhere on that place.
I just want to talk to my invisible friends. Is that so much to ask?
With a special guest. We have Beth Revis with us.
I almost said Beth Revis. Oh my God, I'm going to jail. Straight to jail.
Right to jail. Beth. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for coming on here.
Thank you for having me.
I have been ecstatic to have you come on this podcast. In December last year, I read the first two books in this trilogy that we're going to talk about, this series we're going to talk about. And I read them because I was like, oh, these are kind of short sci-fi. I love a good short sci-fi. I was trying to hit 100 books. I don't know why. My goal was 50. I was close to 100. So I was like, I might as well. And I texted Molly as I was reading the first one. I was like, this is like fucking Firefly, Molly. You need to read this. And she was
now
like,
I have done my own thing because of it. So, yeah. You know, it worked out great. Honestly, Beth, thank you.
I had so much fun tabbing and taking notes. Like, there's literally sticky notes with handwritten notes in there.
I legitimately think you have more notes than I do.
Well, I...
Which is awesome and amazing, and I am an awe.
I love it. But it was so therapeutic for me because I was texting Molly and telling her, like, I have missed, like, really annotating books. Like, I love it. And it's like the English teacher in me. Mm-hmm. And so I really enjoyed doing that. But I actually got the ARC for the audiobook for Last Chance to Save the World on NetGalley. I was one of the ones that got that. And so I did listen to that. That was the only one I listened to. But I also did read the physical copy.
I
like it. Your narrators are good.
Yeah. Your audiobook narrators are solid. Like, yeah, I'm obsessed.
I can't listen to the audio of my own book. So I'm so glad to hear this.
Straight to jail. Straight to jail.
But then it matches in my brain.
Oh, that's fair.
So I can do it for anybody else. But like when it's my own book, I'm like, wait, that sounds differently from how it was in my brain. And I lived with it for so long.
Yeah. No, I love an audiobook. Molly and I are big audiobook readers. Like we love it. And then Molly sent me a present.
Because I had ordered from the one bookshop you do all the assigned books with, and they sent me extra flyers and bookmarks. So I was like, you know who else needs these? April.
Yes.
April.
If you're watching online, like that print is freaking gorgeous. And then a really cool rocket bookmark.
No. This was my favorite of the flyers. This was in there, and this is, it looks like a library thing. I don't know. April, what's the word? Like the thing in the library book.
Checkout card.
Thank you.
And I had no idea what she was talking about.
And you're the one that speaks Molly.
And no, I don't. As proven by the text message I was talking to you about before Beth came on. I don't speak Molly.
Can I get to my point, April?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Anyways. This flyer that came with Beth's books, it is literally all of her novels on one checkout card.
Oh,
no. Isn't that neat? And it talks about the genres, but I only got one of these, so it's mine, bitch.
That's okay. This was your first book, right? Across the Universe?
Yes, Across the Universe was my first one.
And I read this when it first came out. I was still teaching English then, and I had a copy of this in my classroom, and it was on the Florida where I was teaching had like a teen reads group that the kids could vote on their favorite books of the year. And this was a teen reads choice in Florida that year it came out. So that was actually why I had read it, because I read all of them because I like to recommend them to my students. But it didn't even connect to me that it was the same author, because for some reason, I still have a hard time, like, when authors go from YA to adult. I'm like, oh, but they're a YA author. Oh, but they're an adult author. And, I mean, there are so many authors that do that. Like, I don't know why it's a struggle for me, but it didn't even connect the dots. And then I was like, oh, shit, that's who she is.
I knew the name.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, yeah, so we're going to actually talk about your whole Chaotic Orbits trilogy. This is
these books. I cannot tell you.
These covers are gorgeous, too. So. Oh,
thank you. I love them. I love the way they start off with, like, they're looking different directions, and then they're slowly turning.
It's so freaking cute, yeah. though. Like, just, I just like looking at them.
And they're
really like, just like looking at them.
The first time that I was looking at the cover, so this is the first one, Full Speed to a Crash Landing. The first time that I looked at this cover, this is what I saw. I saw these two characters, and I saw the title, which, by the way, this sort of reminds me of like a Star Wars like scroll.
That's at the Nathan the Fillion's beginning. Face, though.
That is David Fillion right there.
That is Nathan Fillion. That is Nathan Fillion's face right
Nathan
there.
Nathan Fillion right there. There's no way that's not him.
That is his nose.
Right.
Like, that is really fucking nose.
And the chin. Yes. And so when I was looking at this again, like, you can actually see the crash landing down there. And that's not where your eye goes first. And it's the same thing with the other two. Like, there's the museum and How to Steal a Galaxy. And then here is Strom headquarters. Towers. In Last Chance to save the World. And I just thought, there's just such a brilliance to that. And there's her little spaceship is up there.
Yeah, Glory's in, like, Gloria's like a little tiny spaceship in all of the covers.
I love it. She's so cute. Oh, there she is.
I didn't notice Glory was on all the covers. Damn
Glory's
it,
in all of them.
Look around. Am I just noticing?
So, if it's okay, I'm going to read your bio, and then we'd love it if you would tell us a bit about your series, but let's do the bio first. So Beth Revis is a New York Times bestselling author with books available in more than 20 languages, which is fucking awesome. Beth writes science fiction, fantasy, and contemporary novels. A native of North Carolina, Beth lives in rural North Carolina with her son and husband. I guess I should have asked this beforehand, but are we okay with the cursing in this episode? I was guessing by
the I didn't even ask. I just say words. I literally just say words and hope for the best.
I have read the book.
I loved where in your acknowledgments you crossed out the last fuck to your mom.
She's so furious about these books. And then the funny thing is my son, he only just turned 10. He's not read any of my books yet. And he picked up that one because it's one of the short ones.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, you know, mommy's not always good in these books.
They're a little sexy, yeah, these ones.
Well, I mean, even the word like stupid is like a cuss word to him. Like somebody says stupid, he's like, mom, somebody cussed. And I'm like, all right, sweet summer child.
Bro, you need to calm down.
And now he just thinks that all of my books are just full of cuss words and forbidden things. And I'm like,
okay. I mean, my whole life is full of cuss words and forbidden things.
Full of satanic things. It's like, mom says those words, but I won't never do that.
Oh, my sweet summer child.
Whereas my oldest will say, damn. And I'll be like, buddy, why are you cursing? He's like, that's a cuss word. I'm like, dude.
I have different sets of rules in my house. My girls are older. We cuss at home, but hey, they're teenagers. They're gonna do it anyways. Why lie about it?
Totally are.
You know what I mean? Why are we gonna lie about it? I know you're using it.
We try to, like, you know, de-taboo the idea of cuss words. And so he's before he said, like, all right, I'm so mad, I need to say a cuss word. I'm like, okay, buddy, you can. And he just, like, blinks at me. And then he freaks out. He's like, I can't think of any. And he just runs away.
I'm a big fan of the word fuck because you can literally use it for every part of speech. Like, you can literally use it as every part of speech.
Mm-hmm.
When Big's girls were like elementary age, middle, like early middle, like that, we did a free get out of jail free swear word, like pass. Never used it.
Yeah, I think because
they just need to know. Special. They just need to know that they can, right? But they don't. If it's taboo, then.
I mean, my husband's literally a sailor. It would be hard to.
Hey, we've been through this, Coasties. I don't like the word sailor.
He does, though.
What?
Coast Guardsmen, sailor are all terms for active Coast Guard.
I don't like the term sailor.
You might not, but I spent our whole engagement calling him sexy sailor, so.
Oh, you know what? Nope. That's the lying. We've been best friends for like 10 plus years. And for some reason, we both tweak out when the other gets like talking about intimate things with the other person's partner.
Because our husbands are like like siblings, our brothers. Like, yeah. I don't know. It's, yeah. Like, yeah. It's weird.
It's weird. Don't know.
All right. So, Beth, tell us about the series. Tell us about the series. Give us a synopsis. I don't care how you want to do it, if you want to break it down by book or if you want to just do all of them, however you want to do it.
Well, so each book takes a different adventure slash heist slash con that the main character, Ada Lamar, is pulling. And by the time you read the third one, you see that all three of them have tied together and she's pulling the ultimate con on both Ryan, the government agent she's running from, slash also wanting to kiss, and the reader themselves. So yes, I really tried hard to trick the reader as well as the characters involved, which was hard to do because it's in first person. But yeah. It was fun. I enjoy toying with everyone's emotions and making them feel
it's
like
clever. For sure.
She's a great unreliable narrator. She's wonderful.
Oh, spectacular.
I mean, she's telling you from page one she's lying to you.
Yes.
And that's
literally.
Literally from page one. And then the solution to the first book, the solution to what she's done happens on page one. Yeah. And so far, nobody's ever gotten it that way. And I'm like, yes. So I feel secretly very proud of that.
You should.
Good, thank you.
What was crazy
to me, as a writer,
crazy to me is I didn't, like, I kind of pride myself on being a really good reader. Like, I'm an English teacher previously, I'm a librarian. Like, I am a good reader. And when these endings happen, I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, what happened? And then it was like, oh, well, duh. Like, that's, she said it from page one. She told us. Yes.
I mean, she lies a lot, but sometimes she doesn't. She wasn't lying. She said she had a plan.
She doesn't lie about food,
though. She tells you she's
going to
lie. She tells you straight up. Don't trust me. The only thing I do trust is that girl follows her stomach. That's the only thing I know about Ada. As a girl after my own heart, we're following the food.
Yep.
Same, ho.
Yeah.
Same.
All right. So let's get into the questions. You know, it's feeling good. Let's get in there.
Bob and Weave. Let's do this.
All right. So this series is a collection of three. Would you call them novella length? Like, to me, they're novella length. Okay. So what made you decide to break up the story this way? And before you answer, I just want everyone to know the first book, Full Speed to a Crash Landing, came out in August 2024. How to Steal a Galaxy came out in December of 2024. And Last Chance to Save the World just came out in April of 2025.
Whoop. By the way, that took fucking too long, woman. I had your number, I would have been bothering you because
I'm sure I didn't feel like that to her, though. She had three releases in under a year.
Oh, yeah. First and foremost, F you. Like, how dare you be so
respectfully.
No. It is disrespectful. You and Brandon Sanderson and all you super overproductive authors can get.
Sure. I mean, I don't even have a wife like Brandon has. Like, that would have been really helpful had I.
You have a life, you have a kid, woman.
I know, right? No, well, fortunately, the first one was already written when I did it. And it was sort of a proof of concept. And
it just makes itself done.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was. I did it kind of furiously, very fast. Like, I got really mad. And I was like, everyone wrong. Wrote this book. And then I was like, well, I could continue the story. I could have like three parts of one novel, or I could have like, you know, three short ones. And my agent and I went back and forth on it a lot. And the production schedule was one of the things. I was like, oh, if we release them as novellas, I can start working on the second one. The first one comes out and I can keep it going a little bit.
Yeah.
So that was actually a part of the contract. I did not take into account that I would have to edit one book while writing one and then outlining the third one all at the same time. And that was very hard and I was not happy.
You were chasing your tail just a smidge.
Yeah, it was bad.
I felt it.
but here's the thing though. I think, so there aren't a lot of authors that go for like a novella series like this. And often when they have novellas, they're tacking them on to end it to other series, right? So it's like tacked on. And what's really hard in a series in general, and this is me speaking not as a writer, but as a reader, it's hard to keep that momentum going, to keep the stamina, to not hit like a sophomore slump, even though it's not your second book ever. It's your second book of that series.
Right.
And this book, all three of them hit. Like, I gave every one of these 5 stars. I am very stingy with my 5 stars. I have read 47 books this year so far. And I have only given 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13.
And you're three of them.
Wow.
And you're three of them. You're three.
That is a high honor. Thank you.
Right there. Those are your three right there.
Epic.
Yeah.
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 She has.
Yeah. Yeah. When I tell you that I can't stop recommending this series to people in my library, like, I legitimately I really mean it. Lately, my recommendations for my sci-fi and dystopian readers have been this series and then Matt Dinneman's Dungeon Crawler Carl.
I just started Dungeon Carl. I'm only like, they're still in the first level. Like, yes. I'm only. Audiobook 5 hours in. I will kill everyone if something happens to Princess Donut. Everyone dies. Like, that cannot amazing. Happen.
Queen Chunk. Princess Donut, Queen Chunk. Queen Anne Chunk. She is amazing. And I just finished book 6 on Friday. So just 2 days ago. And I've got book 7 keyed up on my very totally legit audiobook app that my husband and I share, which is completely
totally legit. Legal and
because the audiobooks are not
questions,
right? The audiobooks are not available through like Libby and Hoopla yet through the libraries,
right, yeah.
But actually, because he's released all of them again in print, his first 5 books are now in print. I had my manager buy the whole series. I was like, you got to buy these, they're so good.
It's been so fun. Loved it. I'm terrified about what's going to happen to the cat. Everyone else is fine. But like,
But Princess Donut.
I know. She just took over.
She's great. She's great. I'm not a cat person, but I love her. I would be in the Princess Posse. She's awesome. So that's been my recommendations lately have been your Chaotic Orbits and Dungeon Crawler Carl. He's actually going to be at Columbus Book Festival. So we're fingers crossed we get to
stalk him.
I'm like, oh, maybe I should go. That's a long
absolutely.
Way.
Absolutely. Come. It'll be fun. You can come.
We'll have a little mini Book Besties reunion.
It'll be great.
Francesca's happier.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to stalk that man and convince him that he has to come on season 9 and open with Dungeon Crawler Carl.
That's our
so
hope.
So that I can read it with the author and
valid reason. She hasn't read them yet. And She's writing right now.
Yeah, I'm writing. And I'm also like, I volunteered to decorate Liv's 8th grade dance.
Her daughter.
Mm-hmm. So fun.
I'm making trees and large scale mushrooms and a waterfall out of cardboard. I don't make great life choices.
Yeah. But the audiobook, you could just put that on and it'll make making those trees and waterfalls so much more fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's what I'm doing with pod books. I'm trying to get on pod books, man.
Yeah.
Hey.
So going into this, this was your contract was negotiated that this was going to be 3 novellas to come out
that's
quickly.
That's amazing.
Yes. And we had the deadlines were like we figured out the deadlines from the start and I knew they were going to be tight. So
it was. Yeah.
But you're like, I could do it. I so can do it.
Yeah. I have an unhealthy relationship with competition. So if there's any doubt of like, are you sure? I'm like, yes, I'll do it and I'll be early. Like I'm so not healthy in that regard.
I can do it.
Don't you tell me what I can and can't do.
It's literally the first one is dedicated to spite because of that.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
We're gonna talk about those dedications. We're gonna talk about those dedications later because yes, we're gonna talk about
it. I really, on a cellular level as a writer.
So Full Speed of Crash Landing begins with Ada Lamar placing a distress or mayday call out because her ship hull has been breached and she is almost out of oxygen. And this is the first image of Ada. We get her in desperation and she's desperate to live and she reveals her to be a survivor. I can't talk today. Mm-hmm. How would you describe Ada as her writer? Like, how do you describe her?
She definitely is very much a survivor. And she's somebody who knows from experience that you have to do what you have to do to survive. Like, there's a couple of different levels of survival. Like, if I were to go back to Firefly, I would refer to the episode of when the bad mob guy is torturing Mal, and he's like, you have to hold the guy over the edge of the volcano's mouth. And as an English teacher, because I also used to be an English teacher, I thought that was a real philosopher for so long. And I had to try to track it down. I was like, this must be really obscure. And then I was like, wait, Joss just made that up.
Fucking Joss. Of course he did.
Come on, Joss. but yeah, so that Ada has been... Ada knows what she's like on the edge of the volcano. Like, she's been there before. Mm-hmm. She knows what that's like. And that changes somebody fundamentally. Like, if you get to that point where you are that desperate and you are just trying to survive, mm-hmm. that changes your whole outlook forever.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But sure she takes, with, you know, some snark and sass.
She's
because she
wonderful freaking... and snarky and sassy. I love it.
Yes.
Because that's how we stay alive, huh?
Yeah. I mean, that is how you survive. Like, if you run out of hope, sometimes all you have left is sarcasm. So you might have to hold on to it.
My childhood has provided me a lot of things. Childhood has provided me a lot of things. Sarcasm, snark, and humor, number one.
Yep. All right. So this story takes place in what I'm assuming is significantly in the future, but what year do you actually envision this being?
So I actually tied this to the Across Universe world.
Okay.
It's very subtle. It happens in the second book where it's really tied. When in the second book, they're at basically the Met Gala in space. Mm-hmm. And one of the museum exhibits is of Sky Martin, who is Amy Martin, an elder's daughter. Mm-hmm. And she was the one who kind of expanded the space communication. So mm-hmm. I would put it like a couple hundred years after Across the Universe, which was a couple hundred years after us.
Okay.
Nice. Nice.
I was assuming it was the future and it wasn't, you know, in a galaxy far, far away a long, long time ago. But, you know.
No, definitely still our world. We just really fucked it up.
What else is new?
I mean, we're clearly on that path.
We are clearly
obviously, this is not completely fiction.
I feel yes. like this could be the title of 2025, Full Speed to a Crash Landing.
Yes.
In general. This
sadly is.
This is mm-hmm. The title for 2025.
And the current administration is the title of the second book of How to Steal a Galaxy.
I mean, he did just offer to become Pope. And he needed a backup option.
I think he just likes the pointy hat and the white robes.
Same, but I don't want to lead the Catholic Church.
Yeah. I just think he likes to hear himself talk.
Uh-huh. Again, same, but I didn't offer to lead the Catholic Church.
All right, so Ada is a refugee on the Halifax, which is the ship that Ryan is on. And the crew consists of Captain Io, First, Saraswati, Magnussen, and Nandina. Did I say them all right?
Yep, close enough.
Well, good. Do you envision this crew as a crew for hire, or are they a true like government crew? And will there be a spinoff series for this crew?
I was surprised at how many people were like very concerned about this crew because mm-hmm. mm-hmm. I knew from the start, I was like, she's never going to stay here with them. Like, this is so temporary. Mm-hmm. And I forgot that you guys aren't in my head with me. And I was like,
we don't live there.
Forming ties, guys.
I mean, if you have space for rent, I'm in. But
I mean, like, I don't know. It's kind of a weird space. there is a chance that I will write more. I have the next three fully formed in my head, and there is a chance that I can have at least one or two of those characters show up again.
Hold up. So this isn't just going to be a trilogy. There are going to be three more.
Look, I can't make any promises because nothing else has been bought. So a lot of times it depends on the market and if there's demand for it. But I do have the next three fully formed in my head.
If they don't, they're going to be. But if they don't, can I still have them? Because I need to live in this world a little bit longer.
I will loosely say they're based on a prison break.
Yes! That's going to be awesome!
Right? Wouldn't it be so much fun?
Oh my God.
It's obviously in space.
Obviously.
Everything's better in space.
Yeah. Duh. I mean, we had a whole discussion one season about sex in space.
Yeah.
And astronauts mm-hmm. had actually done it in space and they were just lying about it. And then I found an article, an interview with an astronaut
who had
gone to space with her husband and specifically said, "We did not have sex in space because this is our workplace." And I was like, lame.
You lie. Do you know people have sex in workplaces?
Yeah. And if your workspace is a space station, like,
You
and it's
you
are 100%. And there's literally hooks to hold on to stuff everywhere on that place.
Oh my gosh.
Lies. Mm-hmm. You better dedicate your sex scene to us now. Because she's like, I can see the wheels working, Beth. I see you imagine it. And it's because of us. You can thank us. Well, April specifically. But yeah.
Okay. Listen, if you need any descriptors for smutty scenes, I mostly read romance.
I love it. And we double check with Katie to make sure the logistics work.
Katie reads things like Kraken romances, and then there's just like all sorts of tentacles, and like, I can't do that. Like, I'm like,
My next adult book is actually an adult fantasy romanticy, and it's space or Viking dragons. So they're dragons and there's Vikings, but my group of friends keep joking and they're like, is it sex with the dragons? And I'm like, not that kind of sex. It's still all human.
I'm in.
You're going to have to bring it to us.
Is this one been purchased? Like, are we
It's going to be out like either winter of this year or soon after.
Oh my gosh, Beth, you're coming on next season.
Yeah, we'll talk after we
record. This is going to happen. All right. There's one more member of the ship's crew, and that's Ryan White. And Ryan works for the government and appears to be a loyalist, a do-gooder. Mm. He grew up on luxury foods farms, which is just hilarious.
Yes.
And he's trying to save Soul Earth from its imminent death. He's also hot and a flirt. How do you want readers to see Ryan?
So... yes, I do love Nathan Fillion, but in my head, it was Ben Barnes.
Oh.
Whoa.
So especially the art card, I think you can see it really good in the art card.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I see that now. I see it now.
I can see that.
Because he was really bad, you know, in the Six of Crows, the Netflix that was based on that. Shadow and Bone. He was Shadow and Bone guy, but like he was Caspian, and he was a good guy.
I couldn't stop picturing for some reason Joey King as her, like just young and small and petite and a little sassy, and like I know it's not. I don't think she's supposed to be white, but like I couldn't stop picturing Joey King for some reason as the character.
The one I pictured was Zendaya.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And now that you know that, when you look at the art print, you'll be like, oh, that's Zendaya and Ben Barnes.
That makes sense. Yeah. I have a crush on him. So, you know.
Mm-hmm. As does, 98% of the world.
Right. I love a good
anyone with a heartbeat.
Right. He's just, there are parts of this, especially in the second book, that reminded me a lot of the series Chuck. My number one celebrity crush is Zachary Levi, for his appearance, not necessarily for the words that come out of his mouth. but the spy cat and mouse thing, it just felt like very Chuck-like to me in parts. Mm-hmm. And so I pretty much always cast him as the book boyfriend, like every guy. Our friend Katie always tells me, April, not every book boyfriend can be Zachary Levi. And I'm like, it can in my head, right there.
That's the power of reading, baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's way too old to be Ryan, but you know. All right, so I want to talk about the names here.
Okay.
So am I correct in assuming that Ada Lamar is named after Ada Lovelace and Hedy Lamar, both women scientists?
Very beautiful women scientists.
Yes. Very much so. Yes. A lot of people don't know about Hedy, but I will put an article below so you can learn more about her, because she was an actress, but she was also a scientist. And she's basically the reason that we have Wi-Fi. Like,
She was able to enhance a lot, and also did a lot of work with World War II and cracking the. She didn't crack the code. She worked on some of the processes that helped crack the Enigma.
Exactly. Additionally, there's a conservation political group that's named Jane Irwin. Is this Jane Goodall and Steve Irwin?
It sure is.
Yes, I knew it.
Coming out.
Okay, so that one. My first reading, I didn't get it.
That was as soon as I did. I was like,
but the second reading, I was like, that is, and you know what really prompted it? This is sad. Jane Goodall, I could get that. But yeah. Robert Irwin's new commercial where he's like with the
I know.
Snake.
I know, like, no, he's still a baby in my
he's
head.
He's a baby!
No, don't do that.
And he's going to be on Dancing with the Stars now. That's not going to help. Yeah, that's definitely not going to help.
I've never actually watched
Dancing with the Stars. Well, I love Dancing with the Stars. We watch it with the girls. But
he could be my child. Like, I'm old enough to be his mother. Yeah. But, you know, he was holding a snake, and it was
so good. I love his TikToks, and he's like, little snake buddy, what are you doing in my boots? And I'm like, that is a massive snake. What are you doing?
He, like, gets down, and he's, like, talking to a black woman, and he's like, crikey, little guy, what are you doing here? And
you're like, you try to kill me.
It's like, why are you here? You need to be outside. I'm like, no, you need to be squashed this.
I love he has a few that he's done where he like literally drives a golf cart around he collects food just off the trees at the zoo and makes himself a meal like it's amazing like what they have at the zoo that's just like growing naturally so instead of like buying the food the animals need they are getting it naturally like they've planted
Yeah. That's his mom, though. She's like a huge eco warrior and that kind of stuff. Like,
well, I mean, the whole family is.
Right. Yeah. But like, that was like all her. When Steve wanted to buy the zoo, he was talking about all this money. And she's like, we have this land, Steven.
Yeah.
Like, literally, you know, like that's every dynamic in a family. It doesn't matter if you're like one of the most famous people in the world. Your wife's still going to go, but Steven.
You're true.
I caught the Jane Goodall thing just because I hyperfixated on her from fourth grade till eighth grade. So that math added up for me real quick.
So, how do you come up with these breadcrumbs? Like, what is this process like for you?
It's usually just me really sitting here thinking like, oh, it'd be really cool if I did this. Maybe three people are going to notice it and that'll be fun. it's completely like random. Half the time I'll put an Easter egg in and forget that it was there. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh yeah, I did do that. But like, I just look around for random things.
I hope you don't do that with real Easter eggs. Your house might smell.
No. Yeah. Although we did recently have an Easter egg hunt. Unfortunately, they're plastic eggs, but we're missing like three still. We have no idea where they were.
Don't worry. The dog will find it soon. You're like, get that out of your mouth. Get it out of your mouth.
That's
chocolate in there.
That's why Dosie always says that you have to have a map. For the Easter egg hunt.
That is for organized people. That is not me.
I am a Kirk. I have a map. It's not good.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Just a line map.
So speaking of breadcrumbs, Ada is a pretty unreliable narrator, like we've talked about. Mm-hmm. She leaves us snippets of the truth, but we do not learn the full extent of her heist of the roundabout until which is the ship that crash landed, until the very end of Full Speed to a Crash Landing. Mm-hmm. I'm curious what your writing process was for the series. Like, did you out everything before you started, or was there like some, you know, kind of on the seat of your pants going?
This was a weird one for me because I'm at the point now, especially because I do multiple books a year regularly, but this was a little bit more ambitious that year. But I'm at the point now where I do at least have like a chart of my main plot beats. Mm-hmm. But this one, I really did sit down. I was at a convention and I got really mad at somebody. And I was like, I'm going to prove you wrong. And I'm going to write a book about it. And I canceled everything and went to my hotel room and started. And I had the first quarter of the book done that night. Like that's how
amazing.
It was so fast. And like very little of it changed. Mm-hmm. The only thing that like tripped me up was at first what I had to figure out that the clue needed two parts, basically a lock and a key. And once I had that figured out, I was like, that's the book. And I had it written so fast. Mm-hmm. And then once I had that as a novella, I was like, oh, I could maybe make this go longer. And I started playing with it. I was like, oh, I could maybe tie it all together. But the first book was completely seat of my pants. The second book was mostly seat of my pants. Like I knew that they were going to the Met Gala in space, and I knew what she was going to steal. And then the third book was wrapping up the last pieces, and that was where the Jane Irwin character, I had to figure that out, like, towards the end. But this one was a very chaotic one to write.
Yeah. Do you usually, like, plot out, though? Like, is that your normal
pants or a plotter?
I wrote the first books. The Across the Universe books were all Panthers. Like, I had no outline whatsoever. I did not believe I could write with an outline.
And you were writing while you were teaching.
Yes. Yes. I know.
I was lucky to eat when I was teaching.
Yeah. Well, it did teach me how to, like, get a lot of words down really fast, because I would only work on, like, the weekends or the breaks that I had, or, like, if something was going that last year of teaching, I had the book deal for Across the Universe, but it hadn't come out yet, but I was going to finish up the year of teaching. And so I was doing the edits for it, and I was somewhat notorious as being, like, a really hard teacher, where my kids had to write, like, a 10-page essay at the end of the term and everything. That term, I was like, okay, kids, tell me your favorite color. That's your final exam. Here's a movie.
From the class. Hey!
All my former students would come by like, what the were you doing? You made me suffer. And I'm like, sorry,
kids. You broke her. You broke the teacher.
I know. But I've completely lost track of the question.
I was asking if you were a pantser or a plotter. Normally.
Oh, so the reason I started outlining was when I got the deal for Rebel Rising, the Star Wars, my first Star Wars book. And when you work with Star Wars, they want an outline.
Yeah.
I am not going to tell Star Wars no on anything. So as soon as I heard that I was going to get the deal and heard about it, they're like,
that's
okay.
Amazing, by the way.
And then you're going to do the outline, right? And I was like, yes, I am. And I'm frantically trying to figure out how to outline.
Google, how do you do a novel outline? No, not that wiki.
It was such a rush job to try to figure it out ahead of time. But since then, like, I've found out I could write really fast if I outline. And so I have become more of a dedicated outliner, except for this series, I was just like, no.
It's because it's the inner pantser in you. You just wanna take off and let the characters talk to you and just listen, right? But you can't, because you have enough structure and know what you're doing and build the world, and it's bullshit. I just want to talk to my invisible friends. Is that so much to ask?
How many published titles do you have under your name now? A lot, yeah.
If you can't remember, that's a bell.
It's definitely been,
I love you. Just so you know, I'm picking. I love you.
It's 20-ish. Let's just go with that. 20-ish.
That's 1, incredible. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21 when the new one prints.
Okay, there we go.
I'm sure. Incredible. Do you have like OG like fan stuff somewhere? Like, were you an OG like I'm words. Losing the word. What are the words? April, help me out.
I don't fucking know what you're talking about, so I can't help you.
When people used to do fan writing, like about different series and
fan
shows.
Fiction?
Yes, fanfic. Did you ever do fanfic?
So I actually never did fanfic because I thought like it was against the law almost. Like, I was like, I don't want to make the author mad at me.
That's the English.
Even though I would have stories for it, I would just get like nervous.
That's me. I'm like, I don't want to touch their work.
Right.
But I'll read everybody else's. Yes.
That's incredible. And Across the Universe came out in what, 2005?
11. 6? Right?
Girl.
Is that right?
Ma'am.
Across the Universe was 2011.
Oh, man.
Dang.
That's not a lot
Dang.
Of time. That's not a lot of time to get 20 motherfucking books. I'm sorry.
When do you sleep?
I'm happy for you.
Not much. I drink a lot of coffee.
I would assume so.
Nope. And those are just ones that were published, because it took me a long time to get published.
Yeah, of course.
And you do your own, like you work with the thing where you do the sit-ins and like the weekends with other writers, and you
just writing retreats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I told you I didn't know words today.
I am so glad we started a podcast together. All right. So at the end of the book, there
I'm embarrassing.
Are
classified- I'm sorry, April.
It's fine. There are classified communications between Ryan and other members of the government agency he works for. And these include footnotes. Mm-hmm. And they seem to be more like what's going on in his head than what's actually on the page. So is that how readers should be reading them?
Yeah. Yeah, the footnotes are definitely his. And that's why for the audio, I asked specifically for there to be a male narrator for those portions. Because
it's so good. Thoughts.
Yeah.
It's so good. In the first book, it throws you off. Like, when all of a sudden you switch to a male narrator, and you're like, who the fuck are you? And then, like, you get into it, and you're like, Oh yeah, I dig this now. Yeah, okay, I get it.
Because I read the first two as physical books and then read the audiobook arc, I got confused. I was like, wait, was that like a part of it or was it like a footnote? And then when I looked at it, I was like, oh yeah, that makes much more sense. But I love his like internal snark. He's like, how the fuck did she do this? Like,
I know, right?
But seriously, what the fuck did she do?
It's so one of those moments where like the evil villain, which he's not an evil villain, but it's right. Like the evil villain who's like, how, you know what it is? It's the quote from Resident Alien that's like blown up all over TikTok. How did you get in here? My fortress is impenetrable. The door was open. Fuck! It's that.
Yes.
How did she do it? Oh, damn it!
I son of a bitch, you right?
So one of the things I love about the series is the feeling of Firefly meets like a sexy spy, like Mr. and Mrs. Smith kind of vibes. And what sort of research went into you writing this other than spy?
There wasn't actually much research because I usually do heavily research my works, especially my historical ones. Like I will get deep in the woods for my book that's coming out, The Viking Dragons. I taught myself how to knit for one paragraph. In the book, like it's one paragraph long. It's bad.
But you have ADHD?
I've never been diagnosed, but when I brought it up, my mother was like, well, yeah, obviously you have it. And I was like, what?
I'm just sensing a kindred spirit here.
There's a lot of hyper focus going on. But with this one, the only thing I had to research, I had to figure out how to do the lock and the key for the first book. Mm-hmm. That tripped me up for a while. Mm-hmm. That's about it. Like that was the longest, hardest research I did was figuring out that one plot piece. Mm-hmm. And then all the rest of it just comes from like years and years and years of loving sci-fi and loving art. Like especially in the art museum, you can totally see my history nerd coming out with the Tutankhamun exhibit and the commentary there. Like
I could 100% picture the museum. Like I felt like I was there.
Oh yeah.
It was wonderful. Yeah.
It was so good.
Exactly what we were seeing. And I've been to NASA's Johnson Space Center in Houston. Molly and I both have because we were stationed in Houston. That's actually where we met. And the control center, the command center, is a part of the museum in the second book. Mm-hmm. And you just describe it very, very well. Like it was legitimately like, oh yeah, that the red phone. I know exactly where that was. I know what these things look like. And side note, I actually, our Sunday school at church, my husband wanted to be in the old people Sunday school because he's been an 80-year-old man since he was in his 20s. One of the men in our class, he was actually in the room. He was a part of the original.
Oh, wow.
Like, yeah. And so he was like, oh, yeah, I can take you guys behind the scenes. Who do you want to meet? And I was like, what? That's awesome.
I actually did the behind the scenes tour and I have a photograph of me picking up the red phone and like faking like I was like, oh, like that on the phone. But yeah, I got to do the behind the scenes tour and it was amazing. And I loved it so much that I knew I had to include it.
Yeah, it's awesome. Mm-hmm. And you describe it like it exactly what it looks like. I mean, it's perfect. Exactly.
It is. It's so good. I think that's my Sorry,
go ahead.
I think the second book is my favorite out of the three just because of how she is there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, she's in control.
She's in the sass and the, I can't stand you within an inch of my life. If I had a chance, I would murder you. Like we all have that one friend that is super nasty. But April knows what I'm talking about. Cause my husband used to do this to one of our friends. Mm-hmm. And she thought it was the funniest thing. She always thought he was picking. And so it's the person that you're, it's always that one person when you treat them like that and they have no idea you're treating them like that. They think you're fucking with them. It is. So I love that dynamic. It cracks me up. And for you, you wrote that so perfectly.
I gotta say it has also helped like marketing that Elon Musk has continued to be so terrible that I can be like, here's a whole book making fun of him. Please go buy it.
I mean, that's not why I like it. I love Ada and her personality in the book because she's so in control and she's so smart in the second book. Sorry. Continue, April. My apologies.
I think I have to agree. I think the second book is my favorite too. And when I finished the first one, I was like, no way can she top this. And then the second one, I was like, damn, She did.
Oh, I'm glad you like this one, because that one was the hardest one to write.
That was so good.
Oh, I'm sure. I can see why, though. I can see why. There's a lot of moving parts.
There's a lot of moving parts and characters.
You also have tech you have to figure out. You have you have to figure out your movements and as a writer. And you tied
it to your original series, so yeah. You've got that going, too.
And figuring out, like, where people are moving without having a map as you write is very difficult.
Yes.
For those that don't know this.
Yes. And part of my problem is, like, if you gave me a chance to just have a character walk through a museum, I would describe every single thing. And I'm like, not everybody wants to learn the intricacies of mummy brown paint. I need to move on. there was definitely that. And then there's only so much that I could have her do within that space. I had to invent the teen character in the middle because I got to a point where I was like, I need more substance here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I was glad I was able to bring that character in because that kind of saved it. And I feel like helped make the world seem more real too, but it was a little dicey there.
More kissing. I'd have been fine with that.
I mean, yeah, they did. Well, the kissing was plot significant.
I don't care. The kissing is always plot significant in my opinion.
That's true. That's true.
And I think a lot of people don't realize that when you're writing sci-fi, even though you're writing something that's in the future, like you still do research. Like there's still things that you need to learn, you know, to write this stuff. So I think people just assume when it's sci-fi or dystopian or something that fantasy even, I just made it all up, but that's not how it works. They have to be grounded in reality or they won't work as books.
Right. And I don't think I could have done the command center had I not been there.
Yeah.
And actually had that memory to build on it. So I was really lucky that I had kind of done the research in advance.
Yeah.
Right. It does make a huge difference to be able to experience that things. And like writing during the pandemic, the only hard part about it, because unlike everyone else, I was like, oh, you want me to stay in my room all day? That's fine. The one hard thing was when I would need to go somewhere to experience it for the research aspect of it, and I couldn't. And that was the very limiting part of it. Because there's lots of things you can get from books.
Yeah. Because you don't just talk about history. You also do stuff like this. This is all binary code, friends. Just binary code. Why? Nobody reads that freely, ma'am.
I just went through.
And including me, I found a website that translated it for me.
Okay, but wait a minute. Molly, in the audiobook, do they read out every single number?
No. Okay. No, because when I so with this one, I parallel read just to, you know, I'm dyslexic, so I parallel read a lot. Yeah. And when this came up, I was like, what the fuck? Where is it?
That's awesome.
So funny thing, it's actually a coded message. So if you type that into a binary code translator, it's a message that repeats. So it's only like one sentence.
I'm going to have husband look at it because my husband's a nerd.
Husband put link. Husband put link.
Okay. I'll get it for you.
Yay.
Unless you don't want us to give away.
It's all good.
Okay. So Ada's
going to have fun.
Ada's a big fan of food. We even see her crying when she eats real meat and thinking about ice cream, which same. Do you share Ada's love of food, or was this just really who she was as a character?
So that was my kind of subtle way. Like, that was actually one of the things my agent, when she read it, she was like, oh, it's so quirky and funny that she likes food. And I was like, yeah, that's because she was starving.
Because she literally is living off protein bars.
Yeah,
and worms.
She's at that point in her life where, like, there's not, like, she's covering everything with hot sauce because that's what you do when you're real poor. Mm-hmm. And that's what I know, and that's how I learned. Mm-hmm. So, like, it comes from that, but she's turning it kind of on its head and, like, taking it to a little bit higher of an extreme. But in the first book, there's also that red, the real peach that they have, the red vineyard peach. Mm-hmm. That actually came from the cross-section of my two worlds, because I was writing Night of the Witch at the time, which is a fantasy taking place in medieval Germany. And I had, after the pandemic, I was able to go to Germany, and we found this little town that has this red peach, and it only grows in the Moselle Valley, and it's, like, kind of rare. And I was like, well, it's luxury food, and it's super rare, so into the book it goes.
I could taste that peach. Like the way that you described it in the book, like I could taste it. Like in my mouth. That was also
a little bit Kaylee and the Strawberries from Firefly.
Yes.
Like Kaylee and the Strawberries. Yeah.
Yes. Let's just hope the actress they hire to play her one day doesn't hate peaches the way
Jill Stratt
hates strawberries.
That would be a problem. Yeah.
Like, all who the fuck hates strawberries, by the way? I'm total side note. Like,
psychos. That's freak. Cool. All right. So, sorry. All right. So, we are going to do a little bit of spoilers here, gang, because normally we do spoilers in episodes. Like, that's our thing. We always do. But not when we have authors on, especially when we have new books. But because we're covering the whole trilogy here, or potentially the first three books in a larger series, who knows? Because of that, we are going to have to give a little bit of spoilers. So if you want to skip this next part, you can. Reading full speed to a crash landing, we know Ada is playing some sort of con. We know it from the beginning. But I was still completely caught off guard when she was so able to so seamlessly betray Ryan. Like, it was just crazy.
I mean, she did think about it for like a second.
But
maybe
she had to get paid.
Because she's tired of hot sauce.
She flees the Halifax back to Glory and literally jets away. Yeah. What was writing that reveal like for you? And how do you make sure you get it right leading up to this reveal without ruining the twist?
Yeah, so for me, it was that moment where she had to think about it, where there's a scene very near the peach where she's like, this could be my life. Mm-hmm. And she has to visualize it. Mm-hmm. And she takes a moment and she's like, oh, these could be my friends. This could be my home. Mm-hmm. And really cement that and then still make the other choice. Mm-hmm. And so that was for me, that was the big turning point for her, because she could have stopped there.
Yeah.
Everything would have been different and she would have been fine. Like nothing bad would have come of it. Like she just wouldn't have been paid by the client, but she could have had a new life in that other regard. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was really having her have that moment where she could have a different life and she chooses something else.
Yeah.
A simpler life. And right? She could stay away from the complications. She chooses not to.
Well, yeah. And I mean, she says in the second book, if they would have paid her more, she may have done it. Like she may have. Like it really, you're right. For her, it's about what will get me food. The next meal, what will get me survival. Because she kind of stays outside of the conservation groups. Like she's not a part of them. She's really like a spy for hire kind of thing. Like,
She's seen from the inside that those groups, like that's not the way to have a steady life. That's why she was starving.
Right.
It's because if you're going to do that kind of thing, you're sacrificing everything. And she didn't want to sacrifice everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. All right, so let's move on to How to Steal a Galaxy. This is book two in the series. All right, we've already kind of talked about some of it anyway, but all right, this book is mostly set around the Museum of Intergalactic History, which is like the Met Gala in space. Mm-hmm. Ada is hired to steal something from the museum during a very fancy gala. What inspired this setting? And I already told you that it reminded me of Chuck, but what inspired the setting? Met Gala?
You know, I think I was at the time, I was just like, it needs to be some sort of a heist. Like I sort of had it figured out. The first book was going to be a con. Mm-hmm. The second book would be a heist. And then the third one would be like an escape. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I need a heist. And if I was going to do a heist, I started watching like Ocean's 11. Affair and like my favorite heist. And a lot of them revolve around like museums or art or something very elaborate like that. Mm-hmm. And I did know from the start what she was going to steal. So in order to sort of put that together, I was like, I need something with a lot of red herrings.
Right.
And if it's at the Met Gala, there's going to be pretty dresses and gowns and pretentious people floating around. Mm-hmm. So
her dress is the only reason I want this made into film.
It would be so cool.
Your writing is spectacular. I love you, Beth. Your brain is brilliant. I want to hang out. I want to pick your brain. There's a lot of things, but I need to see that dress in real life.
The dress is awesome.
I would love to see it as well.
I'm a green girl through and through. Sea silk sounds like something Molly needs in her life.
It sounds like.
So, what was the movie? There was a movie that came out. It's going to drive me crazy. It had just come out, and it was about men during World War II. I'll try to come up with it and tell you.
Yeah, it's okay.
Anyway, I sort of based the dress off of one of the dresses there, which is completely not helpful at all.
So
it's okay. I get it. If anybody on this pod understands, it's me.
I kind of had the opposite reaction to Molly. Not that I wouldn't love to see this in a movie or a TV show series or whatever, but the description of that dress made me feel like the description Suzanne Collins has of Katniss's dress and Catching Fire and just how like impossible that felt like it would be to recreate. Yeah. Like the words that you give make it sound so beautiful, but how do you make that? Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
Like, how do you make that? Set dresser to figure
not,
out.
That's not your problem.
Yeah.
Keep it on the paper. That wins.
If I can have a movie made and the set dresser cusses me a lot, I will consider it an accomplishment.
I love that. Oh, gosh. All right. So Ada is pretty honest with Ryan this entire book. She tells him she is there for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he is so focused on watching her that he doesn't even realize it.
Here for you, Ryan.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like
she's pretty damn direct.
It's Grey's Anatomy when Denny came back. I'm here for you, Izzy. Like, it's that.
Oh, my God.
Except more realistic. This give and take is a fantastic dance. So I want to know how you went about writing that. Like, you knew.
I just made it up.
Love that. But you knew from the beginning that was what was being stolen.
The thing that Ada's voice is very much my own internal voice. And so because I knew from the beginning what she wanted, I leaned into it. I'm like, just like in the beginning of the first book where she tells you on page one what she's done and nobody believes it when they read it the first time. It's like, I'm going to tell you from the start, this is what it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And nobody's, including Ryan, is going to believe. But that's what,
I think
this is just me trolling everyone.
And I feel like, and then you get Ryan's reactions, of course, again in the footnote at the end of this book. But I feel like had Ryan not been so captivated by her physical presence and like just who she was as a person, like if he didn't want to get with her, she's not pulling this off because he's like, what is she going to take? What is she going to take? What is she going to take? He's like, she's like, I'm here for you. Nah. It's that moment where he's like, oh, she likes me too.
But in a way, he works the way like a magician's stagehand would as well. Mm-hmm. Like the magician is never just on stage and the magician is not the one doing the magic. Half the time it's the assistant.
Yeah.
And so in terms of the creation of the book, he's my assistant. Everything that Ada is doing right in front of your face.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Brilliant. Fucking brilliant.
I love it. I love it.
No, seriously. We read a lot of books.
We read a lot of books. Me to give an entire trilogy 5 stars, that doesn't happen.
That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. I honestly think off the top of my head, the only other series that all the books have gotten 5 stars has probably been The Hunger Games.
I was going to say that one for you.
And you know what? Yeah. I don't even know that I gave Songbirds and Snakes 5 stars. That one, I don't think I did.
I don't know if I've read it, but
you haven't. I don't know how you could understand Catching Fire without it, but whatever. All right. So we are introduced to a new character in this book, Strom Feeder. Feeder? Fetter? Feeder. Okay.
I say Fetter in my head, but
okay. The audiobook says Feeder.
Oh. Well, see, there you go. I haven't listened to
But I kept hearing him say Feeder because so I thought he was saying Strom Feeder.
It roamed. Oh my gosh. It rhymed with meter. So that's why.
Roam if you want to.
Give her a point. There's another song. We count how many times Molly sings in an episode and in a season. It's a lot.
It's a lot.
We know that it happens. Is a tech trillionaire. And we don't know the full extent of his evil in the first book. We do know that he's a part of it. We just know his name. A few weeks ago, you made an Instagram post, and I want to talk about that. So I want to know if you could tell us the deep meaning behind his name and maybe who inspired this character.
Maybe. So he's mostly inspired by Elon Musk.
Shocking.
I know. How could you ever guess? And the way his name came about was Fedor, or however you pronounce it, can mean something incredibly stinky, mm-hmm. like a musk, something very odorous. And so there was that part of it. And then the other part of his name comes from, because I'm from South, I'm from North Carolina, but like we understand South Carolina as well. Mm-hmm. And Strom Thurmond, and just a horrible politician, super duper racist, mm-hmm. absolutely corrupt to his core. And so that was sort of my combination. And keep in mind, I wrote this before like the elections had even happened. So in my mind, I was like, dear God, please let it be Kamala. Whatever. But I wrote all this before this combination of him going into the government. Mm-hmm. And so the name was a government name and, you know, a tech mm-hmm. name. And I was like, okay, this is the evilest it can be. It's going to happen. And then it happened in real life. And I'm not a fan of that.
Well, but, I mean, like, I want to like Elon Musk because he's an autistic man who neurospicied all about space, and he's probably going to get us to Mars, but he's deeply, deeply unlikable.
I mean,
deeply unlikable.
As most racist are.
Just deeply unlikable. Like, my son being autistic and my son wanting to go to Mars and my son loving space and wanting to work at NASA. Like,
your son has a better shot of being the first one on Mars than he does. Than Musk.
Oh, I don't think he'll go. He's not on Earth.
I mean, I don't blame him, but
he's not even, I'm not even sure he's actually from Earth. He's
she can barely to get him to find his own shoes sometimes.
I mean, it's true.
Relatable.
It's true. I mean, I can barely get to my kids to get their shoes on in a timely manner. So
we went to try on clothes because he had to go to a dance and he's like, oh, I didn't wear underwear. And I'm like, dude, you're trying on clothes. What are you doing? I didn't know. Why, I was gonna need underwear. And I'm like, what the hell?
Why did you know you didn't need underwear?
And I'll be honest with you, I don't know if that's boy or if that's autism or,
same.
Or what.
Both.
But yeah, both. So Strom is like, he's definitely deeply unlikable. And Molly brought this up already, but Ada's like, I really hate you. I really do. And
he's smiling on her face the whole time.
And he's just like, ha, 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 everybody loves
you.
You're
so cute. You're so funny. Stop teasing me. And she's like, no, I really hate you with the burning of a thousand friends.
And I really awful.
I really hope one day you just go into the void of space and never return.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he's like, what a cute female.
Oh, kid. And that brings me to my next question. So Ada hates Strom. She is very clear about that. Unfortunately, Strom shrugs it off because, you know, men. But this goes even deeper for Ada. So her dad died because he did not have access to life-saving medicine that Strom was using to gain more wealth. Mm-hmm. Was this inspired by real events?
I mean, sure was. there was a couple of things involved in that one. But yeah, for sure, it's based on real life. Like, we had the COVID vaccination and the politicization of science, which is horrible and should never happen. Right. So we had that going on. And then also, like 5 years ago, my husband had a heart transplant. And so I became deeply aware of how our medical system is horribly inefficient. Mm-hmm. So there was that going on as well. And then just, you know, you hear over and over again, the kind of care that people get depends on their income. Like, it's so easy for a doctor to be like, oh, well, you got some bad issues, but I can't treat you without insurance.
Yeah.
And it's not their fault, but the system is horrible. And it's
totally broken. We also see inequality in gender, in race, when it comes to healthcare too. Mm-hmm. Like, always. I mean, I don't know how many times I, as a woman, have gone into a doctor and been like, hey, this is what's wrong. And he'd look at me and go, are you sure?
Maybe you're a woman. Maybe a little gassy and stressed out. Lose 5 pounds and come back.
Fuck you.
I had an ER doctor tell my oldest, who is TISM intensified, and one of her hyper focuses is making sure she gets her fruits, vegetables. Like, Piper is on this stuff. And he was like, maybe you need to drink more water. And Piper's like, I count every bottle of water I drink. I know how much goes into my body. Mm-hmm. You're saying the amount, like, it doesn't change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, the news story last year of somebody killing, not that we're promoting that, but
somebody
killing someone who is, you know, a part of a pharmacy healthcare company. Like, it's like that. I mean, people get really, really strapped. And the healthcare
system, that it's at a breaking point.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. And like, we had this conversation with James the other day for just like the most random reason. Recently, he's recently gotten into like asking us how much something costs. As a mm-hmm. part of Scouts, he has to learn a budget and things. And so he had this whole conversation about like, we have two insurances. We have our main insurance, and then we have a supplemental insurance because my husband is a disabled veteran. Mm-hmm. And he was like, well, you know, how much blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, I'll tell you what, son, if you don't have insurance, there are times that it would actually be cheaper than mm-hmm. having insurance because the insurance companies are controlling how things are costs in this country.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, do you know how much it costs to take an ambulance ride? And he's like, well, it shouldn't cost anything. Like, it's an emergency. You have to go to the hospital. I was like, $500. Mm-hmm. That's with insurance.
That's if you're lucky.
That's if you're lucky. $500.
We don't get charged for an ambulance here in Calvert, but they won't take you to any other hospital other than Calvert. Mm. And we don't go to Calvert Hospital here because the last time I had to go to the Calvert ER, they put me in a wheelchair for 5 hours and I walked out on my own volition.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah.
Nice, right?
And we say all this knowing there are excellent healthcare workers that are fucked by the system. Our friend Katie, like, she's a nurse practitioner. We call her Nurse Katie. Like, she's a nurse practitioner in oncology. And, like, she looks her stories.
She works
with us
so fucking hard.
Yeah.
That girl works so fucking hard. I love her so much. I love you, Katie. You are a badass in your world.
I don't know you, Katie, but I love you too.
She will love that you said that.
Yeah, she will. She gets shit.
So the thing is that someone who owns a tech company controlling mm-hmm. something that would be life-saving.
Mm-hmm. Basic human needs.
It's disgusting, but it's fucking realistic.
And I mean, when my husband was getting his heart transplant, I'll never forget the meeting. We had to have a financial meeting of like, can you afford to have surgery that will keep you alive?
Can you afford to slowly die? Like, that's a thing that people get talked to about on hospice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I'm sure Katie could give us a whole thing about how they have to talk about the financials of hospice care.
Yeah.
I
mean, this was the thing my mom had to do when my grandmother was dying and they found out she was sick last minute. It was insane.
Yeah. So when James was born, he was in the NICU for 5 days. And he was actually one of the healthier babies in the NICU because he was full term. It's a long story, but
he needed a minute.
Initially, I was pretty judgy on the fact that there were so many babies there without parents visiting. And then it occurred to me, some of these babies have been here for months. Their parents cannot afford to not work to keep the insurance and to be able to pay the bills to have their baby living.
Yes.
I'm grateful.
It's a disgrace.
I'm grateful every day that I was active duty when I had both girls because of that reason.
Oh, yeah. Both Piper our kids were born when Tom was active duty, too.
I've shared this on pod before, but Beth is new to us. I had eclampsia and preeclampsia with both my girls. So not normal pregnancies, not normal hospital stays. They were NICUs. Like, it was expensive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I paid thank God, for the military. I paid $75 for mine and Piper's stay. $75. That was it.
And then the NICU
and
doctor,
we both tried to die. So, you know,
the NICU doctor, who wasn't even actually my son's doctor because he was put in the NICU and his case was overseen by his pediatrician. The NICU doctor still had to come in and sign a paper saying, yes, that's a good course of treatment. We'll keep him in the NICU. The billing got messed up and they didn't bill our insurance. So they sent us a bill for $20,000 for him to sign saying, yes, I agree with this treatment plan. Now, to be fair, we didn't pay that because the insurance then got billed properly. But I cannot imagine. He didn't even do anything. No. He literally
joked that my husband's heart's on a layaway plan because we're going to be paying for it until we get a new one for him later.
That's awful. At least he's got it, though. I'm so sorry.
At least he's got it. And I'm so glad he's safe and healthy right now.
For sure. But the way that the system works is it's just broken.
It's set up for us to lose. It is.
And I have to say, I don't think there's any good healthcare system really in this world right now. Like, there are other countries that, you know, you have a lump, you go see a cancer doctor right away. And yes, that's great. But then they're not, the care, the way the care is done isn't the same as what we have here. And it's just, it's, there's no good answer right
there's now. There's no winning. There's no winning. I mean, Hillary's in Ireland. And
my other best friend.
I met her in Texas. So life is different for her in from Texas to Ireland. And that's all she complains about is the medical. Like, it is difficult to get appointments. It is, you're waiting longer.
All right. So off our soapbox. All right. So this is another spoilers, gang. If you don't want to know what happens at the end of book two, skip this next part. So at the end of this book, Ryan begins acting more erratic. He's actually giggling at things that Ada's doing, which is hilarious. And he like, she lost an earring and he's like giggling.
Where'd the earring go? That's so weird.
He doesn't realize until it's too late that he's actually being kidnapped. Why change the plan from Ada handing him over to Phoebe to her actually taking him? Was it just to move to the third book, or what was...
Ada was never going to hand him over. Like, that's her quandary. She got him. That's hers.
And that's also her prize.
Yeah, like that was her prize. She was going to hand deliver. And it's also in part because in book three of who Jane Irwin is, like, she's going straight to the source, and Phoebe doesn't know that she can go straight to the source. She doesn't know who the source is.
Completely fair. And we don't either as readers. And fucking hell, I know it wasn't that long, but I read this in December and couldn't find out the answer until last month.
Ma'am.
So rude.
Disrespect.
All right, so we're on to the next one. I know we're running long. I'm sorry about that. Are you okay? Okay. Yeah. All right, cool. All right, so moving on to Last Chance to Save the World, Ada and Ryan are going to try their best to stop the intentionally corrupted nanobots that Strom has created from being released as is. But their partnership is tenuous at best. How do you plan out this part of the story, knowing that they would both inevitably have to betray each other in order to accomplish the same goal?
That one took a little bit of planning, because they were both very strictly going to do the two opposite things. Because to me, that's what a good... He's not a bad guy. He just wants the exact opposite thing of her. And then they also want a bone. And so that, to me, is just like...
Yeah.
I love that in a book or a series. So that's really what I was going for with it. But yeah, there's also a little bit of the will they, won't they tension that I wanted to carry throughout, which is why even though there's only one bed on the spaceship, they don't use it. Because he's
and they're going to argue about it the whole book, by the way.
Yes. Yes.
Damn it.
Which I can't so perfect. Their scene. That is such an old married couple vibe, though. Like,
For me, it was like the awkwardness of my husband, who, like, women have, like, blatantly flirted with him in front of me, which, rude. And he'll be like, she was flirting with me? Like, that's Ryan to me, where he's like, wait, I really had a shot? Like, we could have been, what? Really?
The whole time?
What did you say, Beth?
My husband has also done that before, where he's just like, oh, that waitress was really, really nice. And I'm like, to you.
To you?
Yeah.
Not to me.
Matthew Biggs has the opposite problem with the male gender. He does.
The guys be flirting with Matt.
Oh, yeah. It's the ginger. I don't know what it is, but the ginger draws the men. They love him. And he's just super not observant.
We went to Annapolis last year, and he was wearing that, like, paisley shirt.
Oh, my God.
Really, and that. Like, he looked really cute. All the gay men at the event were like.
And some of the DL husbands were flirting on him. We had to rescue him at the end.
Oh, bless.
Run away. Matt just kept looking at him. He's like, yeah, I was in the Navy. I was a pilot. Matt's like, cool. Where's your wife?
In this book, we meet the last piece of Ada's puzzle. Also, guys, a spoiler. This is her mom, Jane. Yeah. Nina is clearly hiding all the secrets, but I want to talk about her birds. Mm-hmm. In your acknowledgments at the end of the series, you talk about the pigeon inspiration. Can you share it with our readers?
Okay, so I need to start off by saying I lied because I knew people would read this. And I was like, I can't put into print how bad this was, but I am willing to put into voice. So I was in Italy with my mother. And this was when I was a high school teacher, actually. And I was chaperoning a group of kids to Europe. And my mom was like coming to help with it and like get a trip to Europe as well. And so we were in Venice. And, you know, there's pigeons everywhere in Venice.
Yes, there are.
And it kind of became a running joke of like, they look like they're just chilling, but you can never sneak up on one. Mm-hmm. And like all the kids were like, I bet I can kick one. I bet I can kick one. And none of them could. And I was walking on the street with my mom and I saw my opportunity. And there was a little voice in my head going, don't kick the pigeon. And there was a much larger voice in my head going, do it. And so I absolutely kicked that pigeon in the ass and it went straight up a woman's dress where it got caught.
I bunted a pigeon
up another woman's skirt, a total stranger. And she was just like walking down the street and suddenly a bird flew up her dress and like she couldn't get it up. My mother is screaming. We had to like run behind an alley because this poor woman was like screaming and skirts were flying everywhere and birds and feathers. It was so bad.
Oh my gosh.
If you want to make my mother laugh, cry, just tell her the story and she'll just start uncontrollably laughing and falling.
I would. It's amazing. I 100% would just stand there and look around and be like, look at that.
We eventually went home and like, oh, there was a poor woman who got attacked by a bird.
Yes, let's that's go. What it says in the book. It says that you punted the bird.
I punted it. So I'm not, in my defense, I didn't think I could. And then I did.
I don't know if that's a good defense, Beth.
It's not. It's a terrible defense. I'm so sorry.
This is why, again, you're ADHD. These are thoughts. Why?
It's my secret kind of longing that one day somebody will write me and be like, I read your books, and just so you know, I happened to be in Venice, and that same thing happened to me, and I could be like, I'm glad you survived.
It's our one European listener, and she'd be like,
someone in Italy is currently like just seething with rage at me. And then we went and got gelato.
That's how you conclude that, absolutely.
And then the bird wasn't going any more up the skirt, so I might as well go get some ice cream.
I mean, oh, I did what I came here to do, kick a bird.
I did. I was legendary, let me say. I was also the only one who successfully made contact. Just a little bit too much contact.
Oh my gosh. All right. This book is a little sexier than the other two. I mean, there's no sex, but it's sexier. Ada and Ryan have a pent-up sexual energy that really, in my opinion, needed to be fucked out of them. So why did you stop with kissing?
Because it makes you ask that question full of rage. Like, if I can make you still want more and be angry and don't get more, then I did my job.
I am very
full of rage. Yeah, you did.
That was a smooth transition from the pigeon, like, A plus.
Thank you. I've been doing this.
It's like she's a pro or something at this.
No, right?
I texted Molly when I started the audiobook arc and I was like, oh, they're totally going to do it in this one. Nope.
Sorry.
Nope.
I have to leave you wanting more.
You did. All right. So this book had, this book's heist, our escape has two moving parts. So one is that Ada needs to reprogram the nanobots. Mm-hmm. She has to steal back something she purposely left in the previous book. Mm-hmm. That's the second part. And Ryan only knows about one of those. He only knows about the nanobots. He doesn't know that she has to steal something else back.
Right.
So what we really saw here was an overconfident man being taken by the baddest bitch in the galaxy.
Absolutely. 100%.
Nice.
Yes. Which is why it works so well against him. If anybody else would have figured this out.
Mm-hmm. Right. But He was not thinking with his brain.
No.
Yeah.
And I mean, Aiden might have mentioned things to make him think in other ways.
Well, and I mean, that's where you win there by having them not hook up on the ship, because he was still running on that. Maybe it's going to happen. Maybe it's going to happen. Look at her in that dress. Maybe it's going to happen. Boy brain.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, there's definitely a couple moments even where he's starting to get close. That's when she takes her shirt off.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. Yes.
Yes.
And he's like, I forgot words. I've seen these.
Honeypot.
Exactly. I've seen these TikToks.
It's a honeypot.
I've seen these TikToks like several times where a woman just walks out naked. I mean, you don't see her naked, but she tells you that she's naked and that's how she ends the fight, right? So she's completely naked and she's like, I'm sorry, baby, just look at me. And then he looks up and he's just totally forgotten everything that ever existed. Okay. Like, what is my name? I don't even know who I am. I feel like that's real. Like, that's what's happening totally here. Real. That's what's happening here. She's like, oh, nope. Here's my shirt. Here's my boob.
And she did not have to take off her clothes to put the sun shield on. She did it because he was starting to notice too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was asking too many questions.
He was. He was getting too observant. So, like, time to take the shirt off.
Yep. That's my motto.
Time to take the shirt off?
Yes.
That's our new book, Besties logo. Our tagline. Time to take the shirt off.
It works every time.
Tom would be very happy about that. All right. So I don't want to give away too much from this book. So I'd like to pivot to some general questions. And the reason I don't want to take away too much is because this one is just the one that just came out. So, you know, go read the whole thing. It's totally worth it. Like I said, 5 stars for all 3 books. I don't do that. So, all right. So you use 42 several times in this book.
Yes. Very intentional.
Are you?
Every time I have any character needing like a number, it's always 42 to the point where it's a little detrimental. Cause when I started doing like the tower, I was like, 42 towers isn't that big. Like there's towers bigger than that right now. Like we're just gonna hand wave it. It's still going to be 42 stories.
Fine. So Douglas there's Adams.
Also mahogany in every book because of the scene.
Yes!
When that was mahogany.
Yes. Exactly. So anytime there's wood, it's mahogany. Anytime there's a number, it's 42.
Also, mahogany.
You're such a nerve. I love it.
If you've ever seen the movie, The Emperor's New Groove.
Ah, yes.
And right. Kronk is like, that's mahogany. Anyway, but yes. 42. So are you a fan of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
Huge fan. I love it. It was one of the first books that I read. I was like, oh, it's a science fiction that can be not boring.
It's fun. Yeah.
At that time, I'd read a lot of boring sci-fi. Like, I just didn't like... I never got into military sci-fi or like the really hard sci-fi where there's chapters dedicated to the engine. Mm-hmm. Don't care.
Yeah.
But Hitchhiker's Guide. Yeah.
We need relatable sci-fi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've read both sides of the coin for the pod. Like we've read the more like military science fiction stuff.
And there are some good ones.
Yeah. But we didn't really like that. But we
Was it? Star Troopers? Storms?
Yeah. Something.
What was it called?
I don't know. That book was bad.
Yeah.
It was also very sexist, and I really did not like that aspect of it at all.
That was a Heinlein one, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But we've both read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. That's my husband's favorite series. So when we were dating, he was like, hey, you have to read this. And that I just kept like laughing out loud, and I would stop and read him parts. He's like, this is my favorite book. Like, I know the parts. Like, I don't need you to tell me to stop being a penguin. Like, I know the book. But I'm like, I need to read it to you anyway because it's funny.
It is.
It's so
just
funny.
Listen to the words.
The story you've been told heard before you're about to hear has been told before.
Well, we're about to tell it again.
But different. All right. So I know this is supposed to be a trilogy, but you do have other books, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's potential. Yes. Okay. We've already talked about that, so we can move on. All right. I want to talk about the dedications and the epigraphs in this book.
Please.
Because is it okay if I read them? Are you okay with that?
Yeah, of course.
All right. So in Full Speed to a Crash Landing, book one, the dedication. This book is dedicated to Spite, my greatest muse and motivator. The epigraph is...
I laugh out loud. I couldn't read it out loud. I got you. Look, I don't have the cash to pay for a quote from Bruce Springsteen, so just put on Dancing in the Dark while you read. It's probably that better that way anyway.
All right, so How to Steal a Galaxy. The dedication is... Sorry, I got to get there. Dedicated to desperation, a true soul killer that almost did me in. Almost. I survived, and now I'm going to make it everyone's problem. And the epigraph And I, by the way, this is one of my favorite poems, so I was happy to hear this in here. But in lieu of an actual epigraph, go to your local independent bookstore or library. Find a copy of Dreamwork by Mary Oliver. Turn to the poem Wild Geese and read the first line of that poem. Would you like to tell everybody what that line is?
The first line of that poem is, you do not have to be good.
You do not have to be good.
Be good.
Yes.
That poem is about death, but that's okay.
Just the first line. We're just talking about the first line.
All right. Book three, the dedication. This book is dedicated to that absolute asshole Hope.
Yes.
The epigraph's my favorite part. May I?
Yes.
This epigraph of this book is ineffable and obviously unquotable. Attitude of a Canadian geese.
Yes.
Quack.
Yeah, more of a honk.
All right, so how did these come to be? Tell us about this.
So the first one being dedicated to Spite was very literal because I was at that convention and somebody, like, as women, you have definitely experienced this before where somebody, a man, is going to come up to you and try to tell you about all the things you've done wrong and all the things you could do better, even though I'm the one with 20 books published and he's the one who's aspiring and was trying to get advice from me. So like, through it all. And
ballsy.
I mean.
Came to you for advice, then shat on you?
The confidence of a mediocre white man.
It was so strong in him. It was basically like, you know, you wrote Star Wars, but you couldn't write your own sci-fi. And I was like, well, I started with Across the Universe. And he was like, yeah, but you couldn't make it like funny and adult. And like, he listed out all these things. And in my head, like, I'm smiling because I was, you know, a guest at the convention. I couldn't punch him in the face.
I would have.
That's why you hire Molly.
And immediately, as soon as that signing was over, I went back to my hotel room. I canceled plans with my friends. I was like, I have to write a book to prove a stranger wrong. And that's where the book came from.
Beth, I will fight strangers for you the rest of your life now.
I mean. And then
you get when Molly comes along.
Then the epigraph in Across the Universe, my first book, we quoted a line from this song Across the Universe by the Beatles. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So I knew intimately how hard it was to get permission, especially from a band whose main members and the writers of the song were dead, and to try to figure out how to do this and pay out the nose for that permission.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I'm all for artists being paid. But when I started listening to Dancing in the Dark, there's a, you know, that line in there about dancing. And I was like, that kind of fits with the theme. I don't know how to pay Bruce Springsteen, and I'm too tired to figure it out. And also poor. So I just made the epigraph in the way it would work.
That was a whole conversation when we did the Hank Green book. Because he put so much Queen in that book.
An Absolutely Remarkable Thing. Have you read it?
I haven't read that one yet.
Okay, so it's pretty good. I enjoyed it. The second one I actually liked better, but he does. He uses lyrics from Queen in there, and he has a whole Vlogbrothers video about what that was like, because he was a first-time author, but he came in it with money already.
Because Hank Green.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I had suggested Across the Universe didn't come with that title. It came with Long Way Home as the title. Mm. Like, that was the title I had come up with. And the very first thing my publisher said after they acquired the book was like, well, obviously this is a placeholder title because it sucks. And I was like, obviously.
Yep.
Roddy, whatever you say, guy, that I'm not crying about it.
So I made like this whole long one, and Across the Universe was actually one of my original ones because I love the Beatles song. Mm-hmm. But there was a movie called Across the Universe based on the Beatles music that had been kind of recent at the
time.
Great
movie.
I didn't think it was going to fly. And then they're like, yeah, we can use that as long as we have a quote. And I was like, okay, we can get the quote and quote the song. That's fine. And I did not know what I was getting into.
It's a lot. It doesn't even have to be that much of it. Like, just even that little
percentage. Yeah. And songs are so short that even a line is a significant percentage.
Yeah.
The law says, if it is recognizable, that is the basis of the line. If they recognize it as this, you owe them that, you know?
Although you may have gotten Mary Oliver's poem, because I'm pretty sure that's public domain. You could have maybe.
It's not.
It's not?
No, I was going to do that one legit. I was going to do it like the real stuff. And then I researched it enough to figure out how to contact the estate to get permission. Uh-huh. And like, I think there's like a way, like, I don't think they would have charged nearly as much as the Beatles charged.
Well, of course not.
Which was owned by Apple Music. But anyway, like, Mary Oliver was
of course Apple Music owns it.
Right. But I started the process, and then like that one poem and like one other of them are in like a separate category where you have to contact uh-huh. somebody else. And at that point, my brain just went, no, because if we're going to go with the same format,
this is a lot of work for one line of a poem.
Done.
I tried like literally the first step and then I gave up. So,
yeah.
But there was a step and I took the first one.
There's more important things to use the time on.
I was like, we already have this, you know, format of being witty about it. We'll just keep up with that. And then I don't have to do this stuff.
It's so brilliant. And I feel like it actually is like, I know it's you, like your personality, but it's also Ada's personality.
Yes.
Like, it's very much something that she would do.
I will go with that.
It definitely sets the tone.
Oh, yeah.
For this novel. Like, yeah. Oh, we're just borrowing because that's the life we're in right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's all I have.
Twilight question.
Oh, yes. Sorry. We have to ask our authors this. First of all, have you read the series Twilight?
I have read the first book.
Okay. Well, that's probably fine.
Did you watch the movies?
I watched
one, and then I've seen the clips on TikTok.
Okay.
You know the lore.
I know the lore. You don't actually have to be a Twilight fan to answer this question, but anyway, we're gonna ask you this question. Do vampires have sperm?
Yes, but can they access it? No.
Oh,
because they don't have any blood.
Exactly.
Something like, I don't care if you go in the Caribbean Sea and it's warm water, that's not how that works, Stephanie.
That's not how any of this works, by the way.
I don't know much science, but I know that much.
Well, and sperm doesn't live that long. Like, it has a 3-day life cycle. Like, it's not. Yeah. So we had another author who said
he can have some, but I just don't think he's getting any of it out.
I was going to say, are you going to tell her Emma Barry's answer?
Because our friend Emma Barry said he had one left in the chamber.
Bless his heart. And that one was spent on Renesmee.
Awful.
Good choices.
Good choices all around. So, hey, thank you, Beth.
Yes,
this was
seriously.
Amazing.
It was amazing.
When you have a release date for that, the next one, or
and a name and like stuff,
we want you to come back next season. You are 100% welcome. Don't feel like you have to. Like, if you're like, these bitches are dumb, I'm not hanging out with them again.
I'm so tired of talking to the crazy girls.
You guys already have the exclusive on the bird news. So, that's an in-depth.
You heard it here first.
Exclusive. Book best news.
Beth hunted a pigeon.
Author Beth Rivas.
Hunting a pigeon.
I don't know why I told myself I can't put this in print, but I can sure talk about it on a podcast.
Don't worry, it's just going on the internet.
No one will ever know. It'll be fine. It's our secret. All right. Well, so Beth, if you don't mind hanging out for a second, I'm just going to tell people what we're going to do next week, if that's all right. And I have it down here. Hang on. I'm hiding that book. All right. So next week we are going to be reading Last Night at the Telegraph Club. And this book is by Melinda Lowe. And this has actually been on mine and Molly's TBR for a while. So we're really excited to do this. Mm-hmm. This is a library copy, support local libraries. And this was supposed to be our first Pride month book, but we are going to have Hazel Gaynor on, and we tried to get her as close to her release as possible. So we're going to do our first Pride month book in May. And why not? It doesn't matter. Read queer books all the
time. Pride primer. It's a pride primer, guys.
I just knocked everything off my desk. That was fantastic. That's okay. All right. So we're going to do this one. And then we will. Molly, we only have 4 episodes left this season.
How?
That is crazy.
I don't know.
Season 8's almost over. That's crazy.
I don't know. I don't know.
Beth, you're amazing. I have laughed so hard, and this has been great. And I love your series.
For you to come back. Hey, and come back if you want to read with us.
Yeah, if you just want to hang out and read with us. That's what Chezzy does. Chezzy comes and reads different books, and she never rates the book. She'll tell us her opinion, but she will because she's an author. She doesn't want to piss people off.
I am the kind that doesn't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm currently in Dungeon Crawler Carl, and yes! I think I'll be there for a while. I just started, so it's going to be glorious.
Listen, it's so good. You need to message me when you finish this one, because I want to know how it worked for you. And Molly just won't read the DM because I'll just read it. She hasn't read it.
Because I know Princess Donut's going to live through this one at least. So I'm like, okay, we're good.
I am giving you nothing.
I already looked at the spoilers. The cat's fine so far.
I gave book 6 5 stars. That's the first one I actually gave 5 stars to. That book was freaking damn. It's really good.
A little scared.
It's really good. The series is just, it's good.
Yeah.
All right. So this, thank you, Beth. We've got Chaotic Orbits series, potentially more. But definitely at least these 3. Check them out. They were fantastic. We'll see you guys all next week. Bye. Thank you for joining us on Book Besties. Don't forget to like and subscribe. The views discussed here are those of April and Molly, not those of anyone else. Today's books were the Chaotic Orbit series by our special guest, Beth Revis. Your Book Besties are Molly Biggs and April Watkins, editing by Thomas Watkins, and music is Sleep Sweetly by Prigida. Don't forget to follow the Book Besties on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. If you'd like to contact the Book Besties, please email us at bookbestiespod@gmail.com or visit our website, bookbestiespodcast.com. You can support the Book Besties by joining our Patreon at Book Besties Podcast. Until next time, besties, get lost in your favorite book.